Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio for Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Panier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. Since the Central Asian countries became independent in late 1991, Kyrgyzstan has been credited as being the most democratic of the five countries in the region. That is no longer so clear. There are draft laws currently before Kyrgyzstan's parliament that would greatly restrict the work of non-governmental organizations that receive foreign funding and place tight control over what media in the country can report on. To explain what these proposed laws will change in the once most democratic country in Central Asia, I am joined by Svetlana Zardanova, a human rights and corruption researcher at Freedom for Eurasia and a gender associate for the Central Asia Institute for Strategic Studies. Svetlana has previously also worked at the OSCE Academy in Bishkek, and Sianat Sultanaliyeva, a Central Asian researcher for Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan at Human Rights Watch. And I also want to mention that Sianat is the author of the recently published book, Nomadity of Being, Narratives of Kyrgyzstani Women's Rights Activists. Thank you both for joining me today. I guess, Sianat, I'll start with you. And let's start with the law on non-governmental organizations, the NGO laws. I mean, what is in this proposed draft law that so many people are worried about?
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for having me here on the podcast. Always a pleasure. But the topic is unfortunately not such a pleasurable one. So basically, this draft law, it's a draft law that's introducing a bunch of different amendments and modifications into already existing laws, into already existing legislation, basically. And the idea, and it's already known as the foreign agents or the foreign representatives law in Kyrgyzstan. And I mean, this is sort of a repeat of history because we've had it back in 2013. The same draft law was introduced, and the only difference from the one from 2013 is that back then it was called the foreign agents, or like the concept that they used in the draft law was foreign agents, whereas now it's the draft law on foreign representatives, basically, you know, tomato type of a situation. And what this draft law is going to be doing, it's introducing a wide range of modifications, as I mentioned. Most of them are basically an introduction of these new burdensome requirements for all NGOs, so non-governmental and non-commercial organizations. And it also allows state authorities to intervene or interfere in their internal affairs, including by allowing certain authorized agencies. From what I'm seeing currently, it's the Minister of Justice. So Minister of Justice can just send their staff members who can go in and sit on any of the internal activities, internal or external activities of the NGOs and listen in, take notes, whatever. So if it's a strategic planning session, if it's an internal training or whatever, if it's a staff meeting or any kind of an activity that NGOs are doing in Kyrgyzstan or, you know, usually do, right? All of this are liable to being listened by the authorities, basically. Then the other thing, basically, where the draft law, the moniker comes from, is that it's going to be forcing NGOs that receive funding from foreign sources to go through a register of foreign representatives. So there will have to be registered there. And this section also includes like a whole range of norms that can restrict their activities. Again, establishing burdensome requirements. They have to continue like as if though there isn't enough already different types of reports that NGOs have to submit. Though they have to submit further types of reporting to different kinds of state agencies and bodies. One other thing, so two more things that are this draft law is proposing is that branches and representatives offices of international non-governmental organizations such as ours, for example, the Human Rights Watch, will have to be registered as well, re-registered. There's different kinds of requirements. Again, the Minister of Justice will have the right to interfere in the internal affairs of the INGOs, and will be able to, you know, to check whether their activities fit the whatever that's stated in the mission or the vision of the organization, whatever the charter, these kind of documents. And the last thing is that this draft law establishes criminal liability for NGOs and INGO representatives in the criminal code of the Kyrgyz Republic for leading or participating. So there's like different sections, but for leading an organization that is violating or doing harm, I think, to the health of people. I mean, I'm not quoting it directly, but it's violating the health or the norms or persuading. I think there was a point where they were saying it's, yeah, some kind of a persuasion for the citizens of Kyrgyz Republic not to follow rules or their obligations, something like that. So any kind of campaigning, I guess, any kind of calls for protesting against certain rules or decisions may be construed as going against the constitutional order. And then whoever organized these protests or demonstrations might be charged with or might, you know, yeah, might have criminal liability for organizing this event. So, yeah, that's sorry, it might have been very long. But yeah, it's a very serious draft law that's currently tabled in the parliament.
Svetlana, following up on Sianat's comments here, the law seems to be very vague on some of these points. I mean, it says that you're not supposed to engage in like criticism of the government or actually call for any particular policy, I think, that the government can pursue. What is this? But it's very loose language. It's not solid. You can't really define this. I mean, who's ultimately responsible for deciding what's criticism or what's an unacceptable call to the government? A lot of people could call on the government to increase spending on healthcare, but could that be interpreted? Something like that could be interpreted as interfering in government policies.
Thank you, Bruce, for the invitation. Always a pleasure. And as Sinat already mentioned, it would be nice to gather over some good news or developments for a change. You're right. The law is quite vaguely formulated. And however, one doesn't need to have skills of a medium or fortune teller to understand what's coming really with the law, because we have already seen this in Russia. The country that promotes this legislation. If you remember, in April, when meeting in Moscow with Dyugur Kukinyesh speaker, Vyacheslav Volodin suggested to share some experience, the Russian experience of legislative regulation to counter foreign interference, as Russia adopted some effective laws in this sphere. So a similar law in Russia was adopted in 2012. It allowed the Ministry of Justice to recognize NGOs as foreign agents if they would receive funding from abroad and, in opinion of the state, engage in political activities. And since the criteria, as you mentioned, was vaguely formulated, the law allowed the authorities to persecute organizations working in a variety of fields from education, culture, healthcare, and more specifically, human rights protection. So as a result, a number of NGOs have been closed and their activities have been significantly restricted. And unfortunately, the Russian influence on domestic politics have been growing over the years, specifically when it comes to targeting free media and civil society. Russia provides kind of a blueprint that Central Asian governments can apply to their contacts without even sometimes changing wording. So, as Sinat mentioned, the similar law was pushed already twice in 2014 and last year when it was sent for review. So such over-regulating and complicating the activity of specifically those NGOs that receive funding from abroad, which is actually majority of Kyrgyzstan's NGOs and majority of those NGOs that work on and deal with gender-based violence, providing like legal assistance or shelter. So it means for the NGO sector and for such NGOs specifically that less women, less beneficiaries will receive help, and because the government itself doesn't have it among its priorities. And if we take a look at what spheres are covered by NGOs, these are usually the spheres where the government fails to act due to lack of interest, resources, or skills. Also, if we look at the current bill from the perspective of regime security, it might be an attempt to create and or support state-sponsored and state-dependent NGOs, similar to what we have in Uzbekistan, for instance, GONGOS. These are much easier to control and naturally are more responsive to state needs and requests, but not necessarily responsive to the needs of the population. This is an unfortunate development, truly, but one can say this is expected development, not welcomed, but expected. Already in October 2021, Sadır Japarov promised legal measures and repercussions against those NGOs that, in his words, would undermine statehood and political security while talking about partnership and the need for NGO sector and the government to work together to cooperate for further development of the country. So the government here sends a very clear signal that only those loyal NGOs are needed by the state, and the state basically wants to silence its critics in politics and civil society. And I think we might talk about this a bit further. But what I'm more worried about is that investigative media organizations are specifically targeted by not this exact law, but the law on media.
And actually, you can expand on that if you want to a little bit. I mean, I'm curious. There was, when they were talking about this in Parliament last week, they said there was, what, 18,000, more than 18,000 NGOs registered in Kyrgyzstan. Surely not all of those are going to be affected. You mentioned, you know, some that provide shelters for victims of gender violence. One would hope that that wouldn't be one that affected. But who, you know, who are they looking for? You mentioned independent media. Who else might fall under this? Might fall afoul of this law if it's passed.
Yeah, let's hope these organizations are not targeted. But if we look at what the government officials would say recently in response to gender-based violence cases, they would really want to silence media outlets and activists and civil society sector. For instance, Baisalov would say that we don't need to cover, I mean, we need to cover these stories, but we don't need to be so explicit, so loud about this, so it wouldn't affect our tourist sector and stuff like that. So anything which is critical of the state can fall victim of this law. So, as I said, investigative media organizations have been specifically targeted, like those media outlets that have been exposing the cases of state corruption and been targeted. For instance, journalists like Bulat Timirov was persecuted and pushed out of the country. And with these laws in place, the state has more power to make lives of NGOs, individual activists, and independent media difficult. And things can get ugly pretty quickly, I think. Like media freedoms and political pluralism already suffered major damage since Japarov's accession to power. Few examples of this would be the very recent case of ousting Atyr Abdurakhmatova from her post for human rights ombudsman just for criticizing the work of the parliament and work of the state, pointing out to very vivid, difficult cases. She was very vocal about the Kemperabat activists, the detention and persecution of Kemperabat activists, and also of the case of Bulat Timirov. So this both of these laws would just give the state so much more power to deal with critics of the state.
Okay, thank you. Sianat, you'd mentioned that this law might affect actually your office, the Human Rights Watch there. Can you talk about some of the other organizations that might be affected that are dealing with protecting human rights. And I'm also curious too, how far this goes. You know, there are actually foreign universities one in Bishkek, the American University of Central Asia, which of course, as it says, is funded partially by the United States. You also have the Aga Khan's Central Asia University in Narin. I mean, does it go that high? Who else is affected by this?
That's an interesting question. Regarding the educational institutions, I wouldn't really stretch it that far. Although, honestly, Kyrgyzstan is becoming a country where all kinds of miracles, in quotation marks, can happen, right? So I think when we're talking about this, like what other kinds of organizations or kinds of activities might fall victim to this law, draft law currently, The draft, I think it's important to look at the definition of political activity that's provided in this draft law. And it's, as you mentioned already, it's extremely vague, right? So basically, I have it in before me. I can just read it out. So political activity, okay. So a non-commercial organization can be anyone, right? It doesn't have to be NGOs because in our minds, we, you know, well, not in our minds, but like in the public's eye, it's the NGOs are a certain specific type of an entity, right? But it means, because it's a non-commercial organization, it could be charity organizations, it could be humanitarian organizations, it could be educational organizations, as long as they're not perceiving or receiving any kind of commercial kind of remuneration or whatever, right? So a non-commercial organization is recognized as participating in political activities carried out on the territory of the Kyrgyz Republic if, regardless of the goals and objectives specified in its constituent documents, it participates, including through financing. So anybody who might be financing these kind of activities, like smaller grants or whatever, in the organization, and conduct of political actions to influence the adoption of decisions by state bodies aimed at changing the state policy pursued by them, as well as in shaping public opinion for these purposes. So first of all, it's any organization that might be looking at doing advocacy with the government, right, with the state bodies in general. It could be anybody who's working, you know, ranging, it's a whole range of issues, human rights issues or civil rights issues that different NGOs and non-commercial organizations are working on in Kyrgyzstan. So I don't know, it could be somebody. It could be an organization that's working on the rights of women with disabilities, right? And they're trying to advocate or lobby, work with the Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Labor and Social Protection to make sure that, you know, the draft law, the new law, for example, on the rights of people with disabilities reflects their the guarantees to their rights and, you know, other things, like that it's more compatible with the country's international human rights obligations. Right? Is this is going to be actually considered political activity according to this definition because it's so vague. But of course, we all understand, and I really like how Svetlana mentioned that we don't have to be mediums or, you know, like fortune tellers, whatever. What is the actual, you know, to understand what is the actual goal behind this? Like it's extremely vague. But I don't think they will be going after organizations that might be engaging in certain kind of advocacy, right? Or in certain kind of public opinion shaping, as they mentioned in this definition, for things that are not within the sphere of interest of the government or like, or the, you know, the ruling regime, basically, you could say. And that's anything that's outside, that anything that's not political, basically. So it's social issues, social justice issues, economic justice issues. These things have just historically and traditionally, unfortunately, have been just pushed out of the general discourse in Kyrgyzstan and I guess in Central Asia in general, or maybe all around the world. So anything that's really important is political. So freedoms, fundamental freedoms, rights, and that kind of stuff, right? Or anybody who is gathering, who is able to mobilize different groups of people to make their voices heard. So this kind of activity will be considered political activities. And of course, I understand that, but I'm kind of making it out to be as if though it's only organizations that are, you know, engaging in direct action. Obviously not. So there is also shaping public opinion. So anybody who's doing research, for example, I would say think tanks who are not getting any commercial income, right, from their research, but are funded by, again, foreign entities, foreign foundations, small grants programs of diplomatic missions or whatever. Anybody who's doing research, let's say, on rights or on corruption or anything like that, that would also be considered shaping public opinion, right? Because you're propaganda, you're publishing, first of all, you're doing this research. You're, you know, what's the word? You're like, you're being nosy where you're not supposed to be. You're looking at what are the things that are happening in all these dark corners of the state. And then you're also reporting on it, right? You're making you're publishing a press release, you're distributing these reports. That's basically shaping public opinion for these purposes. Yeah, so it's not just organizations like ours, whereas we are sort of like a watchdog, right? We are even called Human Rights Watch. We're watching, we're monitoring, we try to support the local civil society without, you know, stepping in so much and you doing action ourselves because, you know, our position is more as observers and to try and engage with the civil society, but also with the state and with the diplomatic missions, with the international community and partners of the countries that we work with. But still, our reports, our research could be considered. Like if there is at some point we decide to research a sensitive topic, a topic that's sensitive to specific people in the government, that could definitely make us quite vulnerable to this law, I would say. And the same goes for other organizations within the same, you know, same vein of activities and registration status and stuff like that.
Okay, thanks. Svetlana, it was mentioned that they tried to pass this law before last year and didn't work. A lot of criticism. But this time is a little different, right? It seems like there's more chance that it'll get passed this time. Can you explain why that's true?
Exactly. It's actually a bit difficult to explain why that is true, but it might be the reason might lie in the new administration, and that the space for civil society and independent media has been shrinking over the years. Like you mentioned just in the beginning that in the early 90s, Kyrgyzstan has been viewed as one of the most democratic states among Central Asian neighbors. But for instance, Freedom House reported a decline in score from 17 in just 2019 to 11 in 2023. And the country is now considered a consolidated authoritarian regime. It's been the case for 7 years now. Before, like previously in 2016, it was considered a semi-consolidated authoritarian regime. So this particular administration has been very explicit from the very beginning that it will take measures against the critics, against the NGOs and activists that are not in line with the state policies, the state line. Also, you said the situation is different. The law is basically the same. I mean, it was suggested already in 2012 and 2022, and it was withdrawn for revision because of the outcry of the civil society, and they the state even agreed to have a working group with representatives of civil society. However, they didn't get a look, like didn't have the clear say when it comes to the law. And many say that about 90% of the suggestions were left without any attention from the state. So the bill is virtually identical to the previous one. So it just has more supporters now within the parliament, within the state administration. So it has like all the chances to get passed. I mean, and the situation has been evolving in quite this wrong direction in the last several years. And I think like COVID-19 also played in hand for the government to take grip of the power, and the Russian aggression in Ukraine. It like the situation is that it pushes the Central Asian states closer to the Russian orbit, and Russia has quite an influence over the further direction of how the, I mean, Central Asian governments, they have a clear example of what they need to state to secure the regime security and regime stability. They have the example of Russia, they have the example of Belarus and Turkey, for instance. So if the current administration wants to get hold of the situation, of the status quo, they would push for such kind of laws. And we see that they do. I mean, it's not the only initiative of several parliamentarians, but it's it comes down from the government administration, from the president's administration.
Okay, thank you. And a reminder, I'm with Sianat Sultanaliyeva, Central Asia researcher for Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan at Human Rights Watch. And again, I want to mention that Sianat is also the author of the recently published book, Nomadity of Being, Narratives of Kyrgyzstani Women's Rights Activists. And also with Svetlana Zarzanova, human rights and corruption researcher at Freedom for Eurasia and gender associate for the Central Asia Institute for Strategic Studies. And Svetlana has also previously worked for the OSCE Academy in Bishkek. And we're talking about Kyrgyzstan's draft law on NGOs and draft law on media. which some see as government attempts to silence critics. We've been talking about NGOs, but let's talk a little bit about the media. Svetlana, I'll come back to you right away. What's in the draft law on media that so many people are having problems with?
I think Senate has already mentioned that the law proposes that every media channel should register as a media outlet. I mean, it doesn't matter if you sell something online or you offer some education services, you register as a media channel. I mean, it's overregulation of the media sphere. So it would mean that any organization, business service needs to go through registration with the state. It is true that the law is outdated, but it shouldn't, the new one shouldn't overregulate the sphere. And also independent journalists, runners of Instagram pages and channels like that would also fall under the media law. I mean, whatever they are publishing would be scrutinized by the state. They would need to report to the state. This exactly is what is criticized by many of the observers of the bill.
And Sianat, I'd like to get your comments on this too. I mean, we've already mentioned that this process is already underway, and to some extent, even without this new draft being passed. We've already seen a crackdown on the media. We talked about Bulat Tamirov, who's now deported, exiled from the country. And there's been problems for Cactus Media and also for Klop and for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties, Kyrgyz service, Azatik. You know, is that a taste of what's coming?
Yes, I do feel that this is probably a trailer or a teaser of what's to come. Should the law pass in Kyrgyzstan? And it looks like it, you know, just like the foreign agents or foreign representatives draft law, the draft law on mass media is, you know, the likelihood is very high. Another thing I think that's worrisome, that's in the latest version of the draft law on mass media, and I think it's the fifth version, and that's the draft law in which the initiators or, you know, the government is sort of making it playing pretend in a way, showing that they are as if though listening to the opinions of media experts and everything, have created a working group, right? We remember it. It's been since last year. So there have been several versions of this draft law. And the last one that surfaced back in mid-May, in addition to all the things that they have just not taken out of this draft law, which are completely against the international human rights commitments of the country in terms of freedom of media, freedom of expression, and others, freedom of the press, right? Which is so some of the things that have been from the very beginning and they just have not balked on it is this idea of responsibility for freedom of speech or freedom of opinion. And I think they're so basically they're trying to move forward with this idea of that a person can abuse their freedom of speech. So this draft law is seeking to limit the abuses of free speech, which is just absurd, obviously. But then in the latest one, what they're doing is they're also they've introduced a section which was not there before in all the four previous iterations of this draft law. So they've included now a prohibition of propaganda of same-sex marriages, including other, you know, including pornography, I think, then other information that might be propagating the cult of violence and cruelty towards other people. So same-sex marriages are, you know, included there within the same line as pornography, as violence, as cruelty towards people, or any kind of information that might be harming the health and morality of people. But again, as per usual, the initiators don't really clarify what do they mean by the morality of the population and who is to decide what is the morality and where do we find, is there a list of things that are moral and what are the things that are immoral? There is no clarification of this, of course. So that's also quite concerning because, as you might be aware, there is another draft law that's kind of like receded to the background for now because of these new, more sort of urgent laws, I guess, or draft laws. There is another initiative by MPs as well that's called Protection of Children from Harmful Information. So the difference here is that the mass media law or draft law, it says all media are prohibited from propagating all of this information that I just mentioned, right? Including same-sex marriage or information about same-sex marriages without saying that this is only information that's prohibited for propagation among children, which is the main point of the draft law on protection of children from harmful information, which, of course, I'm not saying that the draft law on protection of children from harmful information is a better law. It's just to draw attention to how this current draft law on mass media is even more malicious in that sense, as it not only aims to register and control all of the mass media or anybody who's expressing their opinions on the internet with the usage of internet, right? So it could be bloggers, it could be even people with Instagram accounts who have a certain, I think the number last time that I saw in the draft law was something like over 5,000 views. Not even 5,000 likes or anything like that. I know I'm getting too technical here, but 5,000 views, anybody can have 5,000 views. That's very easy. Or the number could be even less. But basically anybody who has this kind of numbers of views per month, I think they will have to be registered as a mass media, basically. So all of these things are an attempt of the authorities to really control, through registration, through making everybody register, right? Whereas nowadays, currently, bloggers are able to publish, make their opinions heard freely without having to be registered and without being subjected to the very restrictive rules that are in the draft law. But in the future, that's what they're going to do. So on one hand, the authorities are trying to control the numbers and just generally, the existence, the very being of anybody who has any kind of reach into the audience, right? And then on the other hand, they're also basically introducing censorship of information by listing the things that mass media are not allowed to publish or to talk about in their publications.
Okay, thanks. Svetlana, I'm curious, last week, for instance, they were talking about media in parliament, Deputy Aibek Osmanov got up and said that media should stop reporting negative news, that people would stop smiling because of the reports in media, right? But at the same time, double-digit inflation, rising cost of food, drought they've had problems with. I mean, there's a number of other problems that people are going to see all the time. I mean, what's the message here? Is the government really just saying don't say anything negative so that people aren't on our side? Well, I mean, surely there's fair areas where people are want to be informed why these things are happening.
Yeah, it's true that they just want to silence silence the criticism, and it is also true that no matter how hard you try to silence it, people will still see it. But we also shouldn't underestimate the influence of such laws on media freedom. For instance, I want to come back to this registration, and the problem with that is government, the authorities, not only decide on prolongation of such registration, they decide whether or not register the media outlet, meaning that any media organization is dependent on the say of the government. And the only thing they would be able to do is a case in Russia is to register and to have the registration abroad, which is quite difficult for many of the news outlets here, for instance. So it really is a problem for the media sphere if the law passes, and there is a big chance it does. I don't know how it would affect the general population in terms of access to information and knowledge. if all the information is coming out of state-allowed, state-loyal media outlets, it's already the case because majority of the population is getting their information from state TV channels, newspapers, and, for instance, Twitter or Telegram channels. So it's quite a big issue as of now. I mean, some of the sites are not working in Kyrgyzstan, as we know the case from the last year, but not many would follow them anyway. I mean, people still get the information, most of the information from state loyal channels. So it's not, I think it's not the issue with local audience, but more of the image of Kyrgyzstan abroad. So what parliamentarians or state representatives or state officials are worried about is Kyrgyzstan's image abroad, that when you when media outlets are covering negative in the view of government stories and situations, it kind of gives a bad look to the country, because people in Kyrgyzstan, they do know about the issues already.
No, thanks. And I'm kind of darkly laughing at that, because the state wanting to promote an image by not allowing media to report bad things reminds me kind of Turkmenistan, right? And everyone knows it's in bad shape. The fact that the state won't let people report it doesn't change that, and it's already been shown that the international community sees it. Okay, we're getting close to the end, so I'm going to give you each a chance for last comments. But I'm also struck that there's kind of an irony with all this, right? The government, this one law wants to keep checks on people on organizations that are receiving foreign funding. And yet Kyrgyzstan, the state, receives a huge amount of foreign funding, right? Whether it's aid, donations, whatever, loans, grants, many, many things. And as far as the independent media, some of the people who are in power now, they did not like previous administrations, and which were exposed for corruption and it being inept by the media in Kyrgyzstan, and helped pave the way for the current government to be in power. It just seems ironic to me that the government is now opposing the very things which it has either participated or benefited from. And so I'll start with you, Svetlana, and give you the floor for the last comment first.
Thank you, Bruce. Yes, exactly. Kyrgyzstan, the Kyrgyz state itself is the major beneficiary of foreign funding. And yes, you see the irony here. And the thing is, this is quite a problematic development, because we saw that during a crisis, for instance, COVID-19 and gender-based violence crisis in Kyrgyzstan, the government relied almost fully on civil society. And most of Kyrgyzstan-based NGOs and civil society organizations are funded from abroad. And exactly this resulted in such a rapid and well-coordinated response to such a huge, unprecedented, actually, crisis, healthcare crisis. And what we see exactly is that the civil society as a whole receives just a portion of what Kyrgyz state receives as foreign aid, and also benefits from what NGO sector receives as foreign funding, because in many cases, NGO sector, I mean, civil society sector, fills in the gaps that state either fails to see or ignores specifically, or has no resources or skills to deal with. So it's a pretty a worrying development, as I see it.
Okay, thank you. See you not.
I think what's important here to remember is that, and I don't know, I think that's going to be quite dark in a sense, but the Kyrgyz state authorities in general are just, what we're seeing is they're very opportunistic, and there is no long-term vision. And by opportunistic, I mean, as in it does not look, even though they do make these very loud statements about the nation, about the future, about, standing up and, progress and development and all of that, right? And the authorities have also really mastered the language of, decolonialism even, because they will, in some of the meetings, they can refer to the fact that, we no longer have to respond or like report to the old white Western countries or whatever. I have literally have heard that being said by a high level official in Kyrgyzstan. So there are all these really high words, but then when it comes to what is actually being done for the people, for the nation, for the country itself, you don't really see that because, yes, the country receives so many grants and credits and all of that stuff, but then probably a really small percentage of that really trickles down to the people, to the actual needs of the people. You'd mentioned at some point that, you know, quoting probably one of the people, the initiators of the draft law on NGOs, that there is about 18,000 NGOs in the country. Well, think about it. If it's 18,000 NGOs and if it employs at least two people, then how many people are actually employed? Getting work done, working, serving their own communities? Because, of course, the authorities, because they're afraid and they just don't like being criticized, they're only looking, their eyes are only on those NGOs that are in Bishkek, for example, right? Or maybe a few in Osh. But then let's not forget that there are so many others that are working and doing the government's job, basically. And I think Svetlana had mentioned that in the earlier part of the podcast that, yes, in a lot of the places, NGOs are kind of substituting the work of the government in these places. So if the government is ready to get back on the track and really do all of that stuff that NGOs are doing throughout the country, then maybe this could be really the beginning of a new golden age for Kyrgyzstan. But for some reason, I doubt that's the future that awaits us with this draft law and with the whole slew of others. So I'll stop with this more pessimistic note.
Yeah. And on that dark note, I'll have to wrap up the broadcast because we are out of time. You know, thank you very much. Clearly, you know, this is a topic that's very much in play and we'll see what happens next. But I do thank you both for being on the show. Thank you, Svetlana, and thank you, Sianat. And a big thank you, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mejlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thanks, and we'll be back next week.